is time.
Check it out, y'all.
You are now about to witness.
And it goes a little something like this.
Alexander Ovechkin curl and drag to the back end. He scores! Simply sensational! Brodeur looking for the goal! Down the ice! Scores! Martin Brodeur!
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome back to another edition of the Game Time Decision Podcast. We are back after a one-week hiatus, all because Colton forgot to record the episode properly. So, that was a thing that happened, but we're here now, and we have plenty to talk about, plenty to get to. We are glad to be back. Joining me, as always, Nick Sega and Graham Anderson. Guys, awesome to have you guys on the show. Let's just jump right into it today. I want to start it off with Mark Stone. Got run over by Jacob Trouba. Decision came down today. 2-game suspension for the Jets defender. Do you like it? Do you dislike it? What are your thoughts?
I don't know what to think anymore with the Department of Player Safety. I don't know, like 2 games. It was a suspendable hit, I think. I saw it the other day, and he got his elbow up, hit him in the head. Trouba, I don't think, is a repeat offender, is he?
I don't believe so.
I don't think so.
He's not a dirty player.
Was Mark Stone injured? Is he missing any games?
Maybe. They don't really know. Boucher, after the game, called it a disaster for the road trip ahead. They start in Jersey tomorrow. Oh. I don't know if there's going to be Stone, Hoffman, Wingles, Ryan. Ryan's definitely not happening, but Stone, Hoffman, and Wingles all up in the air.
Yeah, it looked like it hurt.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think 2 games is probably fair for Trouba. He's not normally a dirty player. So.
Yeah, I mean, like when I saw the hit, it's frustrating because that is exactly the kind of hit the league was trying to get rid of. And my immediate reaction, and I know biased reaction, is like 5+. At minimum 5 games for that. That is incredibly illegal. Like that is solely head contact. That is just chicken winging a guy. You know, you just can't do that. He's got concussion issues. Like, I didn't like it. I know Trouba's not dirty. I would have liked to have seen him get 3. I think this is going to be in the future. I think you should do the suspension. I think hits like this should just be game misconduct, like immediately, like international hockey, like Hockey Canada rules. You know, you hit a guy to the head like that, you're not playing the rest of the game. 2 minutes is not enough for something like that.
Well, the problem is the refs probably don't see it live as it's happening, right? Like there's so much going on. It's so fast. For something like that to come into play, it would have to be reviewable immediately.
I'd be okay with that. I don't think it should be challengeable, but I'd be okay if it was reviewable.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Like again, like Nick said, right? I'm in the same boat as you guys. I have no idea what to think when it comes to the Department of Player Safety. I think it's important to look like if they're repeat offenders or such. But 2 games to me, again, is nothing. Like, the game misconduct thing, I think, is definitely something that should be in there. Like, you have a hit like that. Keeping him in a game is just festering. Okay, well, somebody's going to drop the gloves with him at some point, you would think. I don't think that happened. But it's just, it gives that opportunity for it to happen even more likely. Or, okay, somebody's going to swing a stick at that guy's head. Again, I know not anybody on the Sens team would think to do that, because that would be stupid.
And they're not.
But it's just... Yeah, like it's not something they're going to do, but I think it's a joke for 2-3-game suspensions. It's just, I don't see the point in them. I think their minimum should be 5 suspension for anything like that, and that's something I think the Department of Player Safety and the league as a whole needs to look at intently this offseason. You know, it's like, you know, well, he never robbed a bank before, so we won't give him jail time. You know, it's kind of... like silly like that, right? It's almost like that's how they look at it, right? It's like, well, how many times does a guy have to do a hit like that before you do something which in comparison would seem drastic, but in reality would be what needs to be done. It's just kind of silly. I think the whole 3-game, 2-3-game suspension is like, okay, big whoop.
I don't know. I think I'm okay with them being a little lighter on first time offenders. Like if this is out of the norm for him, you know, it can be a lesson on, like, you know, keep your elbows down next time. This is what happened. Someone can get seriously hurt. If there's intent to injure, like if he took a run at him completely intentionally targeting his head, then yeah, I get it. Like throw the book at him. But at this, like for this, it's a fast game, and I don't think he meant to hit his head. But
for sure, I agree. You need to be lighter with first time offenders because clearly, you know, this is not part of their character. They've never done that before. But on the flip side, I think the first suspension should be a minimal 5 games, regardless if it's your first, regardless if there was intent. It's just, I think the league needs to put forth a mandate and show that they're not tolerating this anymore instead of kid gloving it and just, no, anything's like that. We don't care if you're Sidney Crosby or a guy that's never done this before. You're loved by everybody. Doesn't matter. Like, you do a hit like that, that shortens players' careers, could potentially shorten players' careers. It's just, it's not safe, right? I mean, there's hitting in the league. Obviously, it's a physical game. People are going to get injured all the time, but hits like that are avoidable reasons for a guy to get hurt. And if you don't put in a more intense, more dramatic way of disciplining your players, then those kind of hits will just continue to happen. I hate to say it, but they will.
Yeah, I think I'm with Nick to a certain extent. I think it's something like this is okay for a first-time offender. I'm also with Graham, though, that I think the suspension should just be longer in general. For this, I would say first-time offender, 3 games minimum. Only because 2 just doesn't seem like enough. Like, the idea that, you know, for example, this is Jake Trouba we're talking about. If he'd done this on February 28th against the Wild, I'm looking at their schedule right now. You know, if he, same hit, Nino Niederreiter goes down, he gets the same suspension for 2 games. He misses a weekend of hockey. He misses Friday against the Blues, Saturday against the Avalanche, and then he's back Monday against the Sharks. You know, the idea that a hit like that can just, you know, you just missed the weekend. You're back by Monday. Like, that to me shouldn't happen. It should be minimum 3 games. There should be, you know, at least that week, that 5-day gestation period where you are not involved with on-ice activities. You know, you can practice, but you can't play. And you need to really stew in that punishment to a certain extent. You know, it needs to be a message that gets across that forces these players to take some time and actually think about what happened and why they're here, or at the very least be frustrated that they did it and, you know, not do that again.
Yeah, I guess so. I part of me just thinks that 2 games is a lot to these guys, especially, you know, when you're in the thick of a playoff race and every game matters, you know, like 2 games can feel like an eternity.
That's fair.
Now that, you know, that, I don't know, that would be my argument to that.
And in this case, I think it will. You know, they play against the Leafs Tuesday, so tomorrow night when this drops, and they don't play again for another week. So Trouba's not going to play until March 3rd.
Yeah.
Like, that's... And if Dops is looking at the schedule and doing that, which, I mean, would it really surprise you? They're just crazy. But, you know, if that's what they're doing, then fine. I can get behind that, I guess. I guess it makes sense. I just wish there was some consistency on this. You know, I'd like to see, you know, 2 or 3 games always for first offenders, and then, you know, 5+ for second, depending on how many times you've done this. Because it's just something that I just can't get behind. You know, this is the future of someone's career, but also the future of their life that you're playing with at that point. You can't go light on it. But we've talked about that. We've had that discussion, so let's not run on too much on it. We'll talk about one more hit, then we'll get into the big thing. The last hit we want to talk about here, James Neal on Devan Dubnyk. If you haven't seen it, you can find it on hockeyfeed.com. They've got a GIF from it. Mark Harris, MCH, is tweeted it out. It's a pretty good quality. It kind of reminded me of Kadri on Bobrovsky, I want to say, or it might have been Dubnyk last season. Either way, not an outrageous hit, but here's Devan Dubnyk's quote. "It doesn't matter if the player's in the white and if I'm in my paint, like I'm where I need to be. And regardless of that, if the play happens to a player in the middle of the ice, that's going to be a suspension. Like, he almost killed me. You can't tell me that's okay. That's a dangerous play." Dubnyk actually makes some really good points. The goal actually was eventually called a good goal, although it was waved off to begin with. I don't think it should have been a good goal. And to me, that's not a puck he had a chance to stop. But the bigger thing about this is Devan Dubnyk, he did not almost kill you. Like, This is the second time Dubnyk has come out post-game with a quote like this, and I think we need to talk about Devin's post-game speeches, because he's reaching Brizgalov levels for me. Like, dude is just like, oh my god, it's amazing, it's so big! He's just weird. He's weird, and I think we need to acknowledge that he's a diva.
It's very dramatic.
Yeah.
It is a pretty dramatic hit, though. I mean, I've been watching it on repeat. Here
and like he skates backwards into him, and like, yeah, it looks not great,
but it doesn't look great.
Like he got shot by a sniper.
Yeah, it does look like that. Yeah, I don't know, it's a little dramatic, and he's probably pissed off that the goal counted too.
I would be too.
So I don't think that goal should count.
No way that should ever count.
Like, no.
He actually has a great quote about that. This is it. He goes, when I know I'm about to get my head taken off, I don't know how that doesn't qualify as able to make a save, which is so true. Like, if he is focused on trying to make a save while also knowing, like, in a second, I'm going to get crunched. Like, this isn't a receiver in the NFL being like, yeah, I've got to catch this ball and I know I'm going to get hit because this is what always happens and I'm trained for this. This is Devin Dubnyk being like, I'm about to get like chicken winged and oh yeah, I should stop this 90 mile an hour puck by letting it hit me in the chest on the way. Let's just make it a good day. Why not? And I think he's got a point there, but he's just such a diva.
What do you think, Graham?
Well, I think he is a little bit too. Like, I'll completely agree with that. Obviously, I love the guy. He's my goalie. He's the reason my team's doing so well, or a big reason why they're doing so well. I think sometimes he says stuff that is a little over the top, and by a little, I mean a lot. You know, things like that happen. You put yourself in a situation like that. I think as a Wild fan, and maybe he's feeling this way too. Like, I still feel we don't have the respect of the league, to be completely honest with the two of you. Even though we're leading the conference and we're playing fantastic, I still feel like nobody in the league is going to give us the respect until we do something in the playoffs, which is fine. I completely agree with that. But like the season we've put together, I still think there's a lot of people that are like, oh yeah, Minnesota, right, they're leading the division. But look at the Blackhawks. And it's like, you know, we're like an afterthought, even though we're leading the conference and playing fantastic. So I think, you know, Dubnyk also realizes how important he is. Like, he's like, I'm just as good, if not better, these are my words, than Carey Price. And I'll say that, and people will probably be like, this guy's nuts. Again, biased opinion. But I think he also realizes that, right? So any little thing like that, if he, you know, pulls a hammy or something like that happens, and now he misses a week of action, 3 or 4 games, like, that's going to hurt my team. And I mean, and that goes the case for any team that has an elite goaltender for sure. But I think all of those things festered together just make him say stuff that's just like, okay, that's a little over the top.
Yeah. You know what? Now you got me thinking. Like, the Wild there's a lot of pressure on them right now. They're leading the division. You know, they're having a great season. And, you know, if he gets hurt, everything changes. So, yeah. You've convinced me a little bit, Graham.
On that note, I was reading a Travis Yost article the other day, and because the critique this season of the Wild is that their PDO has been running a bit hot all season. It's like, okay, when are they going to cool down? You know, part of that comes with having Devin Dubnyk, who's proven over the last few seasons he can be a top-tier goaltender. I don't want to say elite, because I'm not totally on board that train yet, but top-tier. But I was reading this article from Yost, and he was talking about Bruce Boudreau and his ability to potentially influence PDO. And the thought process was, look, we've got thousands and thousands of shots, you know, over 1,000 games from Boudreau. And we've seen consistently that his teams outperform expectations. They're typically better finishers, or typically they're having goaltenders with a higher save percentage. And part of that does come with having coached Ovechkin. And part of that comes with having coached Ryan Getzlaff and Corey Perry. But the other part of that could just be like, look, this guy's got it figured out. He's got tactics that work and that let his teams run hot in the regular season. Maybe there's something that changes in the postseason. Maybe teams adjust their structure and he just keeps playing his way. But certainly in the regular season, it appears as if Boudreau does have some sort of influence over the way his teams perform, at the rate they score, at the rate they save. And if that's the case, then the critique against the Wild becomes almost a moot point, and you're faced with a team that simply is at the top of their division, that's a very good team, that might not be cooling down, and this might just be the Minnesota Wild. And I think that is a very interesting thought, because if that's the case, I mean, that changes the West outlook, in my opinion, substantially. Is now you've got to really consider the Wild. You know, before it was like, okay, maybe they're a good team when they make it a couple rounds, but, you know, how do they fare against a team like San Jose? Or, you know, how will they do against a team like Nashville that on a good day could run over them, or a St. Louis that in the past, or Chicago, like in the past, that have given them issues? If that's the case and this team really is as good as they seem to be, I think that's interesting.
Well, and I think that's where I kind of, you know, step back a little bit as a fan, in that for me, teams are always looked at, what have you done for me lately? And I think that goes for coaches, players, everybody. It doesn't matter what area you contribute to the game, whether it's on the ice, in the boardroom, anything like that. What have you done for me lately? And the Wild are clearly having an amazing season. They're going to make the playoffs, but you know, it's always Chicago or St. Louis. That seems to be the hump we just can't get over. So it's one of those, like, we're playing a great regular season. Can you then convert that to a postseason run, or are you destined for another second round exit? I hope that's not the case. But that's kind of where I step back and be like, we haven't done anything yet. We've done a great regular season. And I think that goes for any sports. Teams can go and have a 14-2 record in the NFL. If you don't win the Super Bowl, who cares? Doesn't matter. And I think that goes the same for any sport. Like, you know, the Warriors, for example, in the NBA, regular season record for wins, didn't win the title. Who cares? Doesn't matter. And I think that's kind of where I'm at as a Wild fan, is we can go and have a 110-point season. If we then have a second-round exit again, I'll be disappointed, and then it'll flip back to great in the regular season, but you didn't cash in the postseason.
That's fair. I think that's...
Yeah, and hockey...
Sorry, go ahead.
I was saying, hockey's one of those great sports that, like, once the playoffs hits, it's a complete reset and anything can happen, right? Like, look at the Kings a few years ago, 8th seed, they won the Stanley Cup. Like, you never know.
Yeah, and that's just it. You know, I mean, the Kings maybe not the best example, because a lot of people called that early in the analytics movement, but, you know, it is, to a certain extent, that's just hockey. It's just one of those sports where it's a test to the difficulty. It attests the difficulty that is making the Stanley Cup and winning it. Very good teams get there over and over and over again and just don't seem to find a way. So I don't think there's anything wrong with what the Wilds have done, but as a fan, I certainly understand the frustration. You know, early 2000 Senators, yeah. What's up?
Well, I was just looking at their stats. It's really interesting. They're not a great Corsi team.
No.
Their shooting is, like, the amount of shots they take is kind of middle of the pack in the league, but their team shooting percentage is almost 10%, which is like second in the league. So the shots they are taking, they make count, which is great. Like, they're just capitalizing on their opportunities.
If you haven't read the Yoast article yet, for anyone listening, highly recommend you go on TSN and give that a read. It's intuitive. It's not overly complex, and it's an interesting point, and it does speak to that 10% shooting. But let's move on here. Let's go to the other side of the NHL, Atlantic Division. Florida Panthers, 7-2-1 in their last 10 games. They are on fire. They've won 4 straight. This team's doing it all. Do you believe in the Fancy Cats?
Yeah.
Yes.
Both of you are on board. Wow.
Nick's yes with a yes of my own.
Yeah, I think that, like, everyone thought the Panthers were going to do well this year. So I don't think we should be surprised that they're finally doing well.
And especially now that Huberto and Barkov are back, like, I think, you know, it would be a much different story if those two guys were healthy all season. But in a weird way, it's almost like, I don't want to say a blessing, but it's a given the team a spark at the end of the season to have arguably their best player in Huberto back now. It's like, you know, some teams look to the trade deadline and acquiring that piece as the spark, or they fire their head coach and that's a spark. But it's almost like Huberto has been the internal back from injury spark, and that this team's gotten. And I think that's going to allow them to succeed and go for and go forward, you know. And I think it, the nice thing with all those young kids is the spotlight is on Jarger, with all the milestones he's reached and all that kind of stuff. I don't want to say the spotlight.
That's a great point.
Not that Trocheck and Marchessault and all those guys don't get the credit they deserve, because they do. But the spotlight is on Jarger. So, like, Trocheck's got, like, 50, I could be a little high with that, but 50 points, 20 goals, like, something ridiculous. He's having a really good year. Like, he leads the team in points. And I didn't know that until I looked it up. I'm happy because he's on my fantasy team. I think he may be 41 or 42, so I'm exaggerating with the 50. But, again, all those young guys don't have the spotlight on them, right? Like, if you're comparing it, right, like, Laine's got all the spotlight on him in Winnipeg. Shifley's having a great year, but still, Laine's got all that spotlight on him. All these other young guys in Florida, everybody's focusing on Jarger. When's he going to get .1900? Well, he's got that already, but still, the focus is on him. And what can this 45-year-old guy do? Oh, yeah. By the way, all these other kids are playing great, but he takes the spotlight away from them, so they can have good years and kind of fly under the radar, which I think helps.
Yeah, that's a great point. Let me ask you guys this. If Huberto and Barkov are healthy all season, is Gerard Gallant still the head coach of the Florida Panthers?
Oh,
no.
No, you think he's gone?
Yeah, I think he's gone. I think.
Can I give the Switzerland answer and say maybe?
No, we don't accept sitting on the fence on this podcast, sir.
Well, then I'll just agree with Cole. I don't think so. I think they need to go in a different direction, to be fair, and I think they've done that. So.
Yeah, I think part of the issue was deployment, and I think no matter what happens, systems and deployment would still be an issue with Gallant. And so regardless of how the team was doing, I think that eventually would have ended. You know, maybe he's still the coach today. At the end of the season, I think he'd be gone. So I think no matter what, at some point in this year, Gerard Gallant was being fired or released, if you want to put it nicely, from the Florida Panthers. And I don't know what more he could have done to save his job other than just, you know, adopt to their systems and change the way that he looks at things. But that's, you know, he's an established coach. That's a lot to ask a guy. Sometimes you just have differing philosophies. I'm really disappointed in both of you, though. I was expecting hot takes on the Panthers all day. Yeah, like, nah, this team is just riding hot. They're still trash. They weren't even that good last season. They were riding percentages. This is just that again. I'm really disappointed in both of you.
Sorry, man.
No.
Sorry.
I believe in cats.
I believe in them. I think they have the pieces.
I mean, like, you look at the Atlantic standings right now. Montreal, 70 points. Ottawa, 68. Boston, 66. And it's just mess from there. You know, 66 with Boston. 64, Florida. 65, Toronto. Any of those teams can make it. Buffalo, they're not out of it. 62 points. Heck, even the Lightning. 60 points. They're not out of it. They're right in the mix. All it takes is a couple losses. Like, this is anybody's division. And I think it's very interesting to see how this shakes up in the end, because literally any team, except for probably the Wings, sorry, Nick, could take this.
Hey, we just beat Pittsburgh and Washington this weekend, all right? Ken Holland's not making any trades now.
If you could make one trade, if you were Ken Holland for a day, you could ship out one Wings player. No one's buying Steve Hott, so forget about it.
The easy answer is Thomas Vanek.
Yeah,
you know, I think that one's a no-brainer. You have to move him. He's having a great season, and you know he can actually bring something back. So that one actually shouldn't even be hard for him to move. I think the hard answer is Brendan Smith.
Yeah.
He's a UFA at the end of the year, and you know he doesn't really have a place on the roster. Really, he's kind of lost. So. I don't know how you get rid of him, but
who?
Brendan Smith, which is a shame because I think he's one of the better defenders on the Wings. I'm not a huge fan of the defensive core there, though. So
he's a good player if he can be used properly.
Yeah,
but he does. He also doesn't have the defensive support that he needs.
It's just like so many of those players.
Now, like going with Detroit and who they trade, I think that's a piece like all Atlantic Division teams, since it is such a tight race. And if we say race, and they still got like 25 games left in the season. It's not like they only got like 10 games left, and it's like down to the wire. But since they're all so close, I think it's going to be who makes the, you know, who makes the move first that will give them that edge, who acquires that player that the other teams are like, oh, darn, we wish we got that guy. You know, and who is better equipped to acquire those assets and who's, you know, more readily available to move people and that kind of stuff. And I think that'll be interesting to see what happens with the trade deadline looming, what those teams all do, since it is so close in that whole division. Like Tampa's, like we just said, Tampa's not that far out. Does Tampa trade Stamkos for something big? Who knows?
Yeah, maybe. I doubt it. If they just signed him for 8 years, so I know.
Well, I throw something ridiculously crazy out there because, I mean, that could be a Stamkos trade. Okay, that's clearly crazy for me to say that. So let's move on from that. But like, do these teams, you know, make crazy trades to try to one up the other team? I guess would be the best way for me to put that.
I am firmly on board for trade for either Duchene or Landeskog if they are available. Like, both of those players are fantastic, especially from a Senators point of view. Like, if they could move Cody Ceci plus, say, a first-round pick for Landeskog or Duchene or either. You know, I don't want to do the Ceci slash Shabbat White slash first deal that had been proposed, but if you can limit that down to two, I'm firmly in camp do that. Because they don't have a ton of prospects, and the division really sucks this year, and you're not going to get another chance like this with the team you have potentially ever. So, like, for so many Atlantic teams, aging Atlantic teams, this is the time to do it. Like, this is the time to add if you don't have prospects, because you're never going to get a better shot at this. I think the Florida Panthers are built to win now, and if they can make the playoffs, I think they could go far. I think they really need to look at adding a player, a solid forward.
Well, and I think that's definitely like going off of Colorado there. I think all these Atlantic teams are going to be looking at Arizona and Colorado. Okay, they're dumpster fires. They're going to get rid of everybody if they can. To put it lightly, that wasn't even lightly. Dumpster fire is not a light way to put that. but they're going to try to. I mean, they're clearly rebuild all the way. We'll acquire as many picks as we can. You can take whoever you want because we have nobody. So if I'm the Atlantic, I go, okay, what do you want for Landeskog? What do you want for Duchene? Or do you also look and see, what do you want for Boschman? Like, let's bring in a veteran guy who's going to want to have a run at the cup, or an Iginla, who again is kind of going out with a whimper, unfortunately, to finish his career, in my opinion. But do you look at both of that, both sides of that coin, right? Do we give up something to bring in a veteran guy, or do we bring in something to help our offensive quarter? Because if you're Ottawa, Carlson, by the way, is a defenseman, for those of you who forget that he is. so maybe it'd be nice to have some forwards that can also produce on the score sheet in Ottawa that aren't hurt now. right. So, you know, is that something they do now in Ottawa? Is, oh, crap, you know, like now we have Hoffman and Stone out. We need to, okay, Landeskog, come here, or Duchene, come here. You need to help us save our season, because right now we're 2 points out of leading the division. So we're going to bring you in to save us, because who knows how long those two will be out.
We need another suite. That's what it is. We lost Zibanejad. We lost Alfredson. It's time for another suite. Landeskog, come on over. EK wants to say hi.
I can see that. I also think Iginla's a lock to be moved this year.
I did
too. I think for sure they're going
to
move him.
Oh, guaranteed. He's asked to be moved. He's, you know, it's if I'm Colorado, I just do that. Because he's been bitching to get moved, and I don't want to say reward the guy, but he's had a pretty obviously great career that unfortunately is, like I've said, gone finishing off with a whimper. But I think if your Colorado goes, yeah, go and take your run at the cup one last time, we'll trade you to Chicago. I don't know. I'm just throwing out a team that always seems to have a good run in the playoffs.
Washington.
So, yeah. I mean,
it could be Washington's year.
I think the bigger question for me, though, is, like, realistically, how much does a Jerome Iginla help you? How much does a Radim Vrbata, does a Martin Hanzel, does a Francois Beauchemin help you? Because the guys who are available this year, as far as rentals are concerned, I don't think are all that great. You know, I'm not really willing to ship out higher than a third for 7-goal Jerome Iginla because he has a nice name.
I'm with you there. I wouldn't be, you know, giving up a lot to get those veteran guys because they aren't great. Are they good? Yes. Have they proven themselves? Like, you don't play that many games and stay in the league that long if you can't give something to your organization. I think what they would bring to your team, you're not going to acquire guys like that and expect them to be a boost on the stat sheet. They're going to be a boost in the locker room, and they're going to be a boost of, I've been playing this game for X amount of years, and I've never sniffed the playoffs. Now I got a shot at it, so let's do this. And right, and they're gonna be a big boost in the locker room, I think, and they're gonna be hungry for it too. So they may not come in and score 20 points in 20 games, score 20 goals in 20 games or anything like that, but they're gonna bring that. You know, if you're a team that's constantly making the playoffs, and now you bring in a veteran guy who's never sniffed it, that's going to be like an eye opener and like a welcome viewpoint to see, right? Like, because I think some teams that constantly make it almost like don't appreciate how fortunate they are to continuously always be making the playoffs. It's like, you don't know what it's like to not play in the playoffs. I do. I never have. So that would be a different perspective, I think, for these teams that are constantly there, to have somebody like a Hanzel who's never been there to do that.
You know who I'd go out? Antoine Roussel in Dallas. $2 million a year. Decent possession player, especially as of late. 27 years old. He does okay as far as points are concerned. He's got 25. Big Pims guy. You know, he's the gritty player that you want in the playoffs. He's not a detriment to the team that he's on. I'd seriously look at trying to pry him out of Dallas. Things are going poorly there. You promise him a couple prospects, and maybe they look at a rebuild. I don't know. Same with Patrick Sharp. Can you pry him out of Dallas?
I think Dallas is an interesting team to talk about for sure, because outside of Sagan and Ben, they really don't. I mean, fantastic 1-2 punch. You can build a team around those two guys for sure. Klingberg's got some upside there on the blue line, but really beyond that, you could probably pry a lot of guys out of there, and they could think, okay, who are we going to supplement Ben and Sagan with? So I wouldn't be surprised if Dallas is a big seller.
I mean, Patrick the deadline is the obvious one, right? Guys.
Really? Is Dallas? Do you think Dallas is that bad, or is this year just like an anomaly?
Eves is 32. His deal is up at the end of the year, and he has 37 points. He's their third highest scorer. I mean, for me, that's the guy you're going after. He's got a low cap hit. It'll be a couple of $100,000 for when you take him over. Like, this is. If you can pry Patrick Eves out of Dallas and you're a contending team, you do it, depending on what the cost is. I'm a huge fan of his. I have been since he played in Ottawa. He's just the kind of player I adore.
Talking about Patrick Eves hurts me, because he played for Detroit for a long time, and he did nothing in Detroit.
I'm sorry.
He was like a perennial fourth line player, and they let him go, and then he kicked ass in Dallas.
Yeah.
Well, that sometimes that happens. So, like with what you're saying about an anomaly in Dallas, like, I don't think it's an anomaly. I think they legitimately need some shakeup there. Like, again, like a great 1-2 punch with Sagan and Ben, but I think they need something else there. They don't have the depth that a lot of other teams that they need to contend with and beat have. So I think that's something they need to try to find. So we'll see.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I mean, these are players who can perform well in certain situations at the end of the day. You know, when you're playing on a power play with Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin, success does tend to find its way to you. And there could be certainly some...
No, of that, really?
But I think Eves does...
In a statement that shocks no one...
Yeah. Yeah. Standing in front of the net when those three and Jason Spezza are working the puck around you is a pretty easy job. At the very least, it's a fun job to have. You just get to watch. It's front row seat to that one.
Even I could put up points in the NHL.
Yeah, no, your plus minus rating is going to go. Well, I guess on the power play it doesn't count. But
oh, you really could. You really could. All right, I guess we'll move on. Atlantic Division. Who are the three teams that make it? Who do you think? I think Ottawa, God. Montreal are a lock. I think it's that third team that's up for debate.
Oh, I agree. Ottawa and Montreal, the third team.
I'm going Fancy Cats. No, check that. I'm going Maple Leafs.
I'm going Florida.
See it.
I'm going to go Habs, Panthers, Leafs. Sorry, Colton.
Wow. Are you... You know what? No, you get off the cast. This is it. You're fired.
Sens dropped to the wild card.
The Sens have the least games played of all of those teams. Actually, check that. They're tied with the Panthers. But still.
I know, but they... The injury bug has hit them hard. I think they're going to make some some stupid trades. No offense, but I think yeah, they try to fill those voids.
Always.
I think they will. And I think it's just, I think that and we've talked about it all season. Like, how are they still this good? They shouldn't be this good. And I think these last 25 games will be like, yeah, no, this is what we expected. There was no way that they were going to be this good. And now I think they're going to slip to a wild card spot. And then the Leafs and the Panthers are going to leapfrog them.
The system has steadily improved. They are now a 50% possession team over the last 2 months. And while that is not great, that is much better than the 46-47 they were in the first half of the season. I am still firmly on what this team is a 500 team and playing in a crappy division. And I think they have enough of a cushion there as long as the injuries aren't too bad. I mean, they've got 3 points and a game in hand on the Maple Leafs. They have 2 points and two games in hand on the Bruins, and they have 4 points on the Panthers. You know, yeah, if they slide a bit, they could, you know, fall out of contention, but they're 2 points off the lead. And they have two games in hand on the Canadiens. Like, realistically, Ottawa could win the division this year. And that's not even a threat.
It's crazy, man. It's so close.
I laugh with love.
Oh, I know. Had you told me that the Sens were going to win the division at the start of the year, even if they don't, that they would be in contention to win it even, I would have laughed you off. That's ridiculous. I didn't even think the Sens would push for the postseason this year. So to have them where they are has been a pleasant surprise. But at the same time, like, this is just a terrible division. And I think between those final three teams, I don't think the Bruins get it. You know, I think losing Claude Julien will hurt a ton. The Leafs, I am skeptical of only because of that defense. It's just abysmal. I don't think Morgan Riley is defensively capable of being a number one D. And he's paired with a young guy who doesn't really have that talent either. You're basically feeding a 2 and a 4 to other teams' top pairings. And I don't know why you're not giving Jake Gardner that spot. But that's besides the point. I just don't believe in that defense. As far as the Fancy Cats go, I guess they're my team. You know, they're on a streak, and streaking teams do well. They're losing right now to St. Louis,
Here's a question: when does Steven Stamkos come back?
Oh, check that, they're winning. Steven Stamkos, I am not sure when he returns. I can find that.
And does that make a difference in your vote?
No, I think that even if he comes back, he's only going to play in what? Like, if he came back today, he'd only play in 25 games. And as good as he is, he's one player. Like, that's, I think the Lightning season is just, again, they're still so close. So I shouldn't say it's gone, but sorry?
I said, I don't even think he's their best player.
Well, and that exactly. Like, I think Kucherov is better. But I think he'd be a great spark, but it's almost like, depending on how bad his injury is, if he's supposed to come back this week, then sure, you bring him back. But if it's like, oh, he's not going to come back till March 30th, do you bring him back for the last 10 games, for the last 6 games of your season or something like that? Like, to me, that would kind of be silly. It's like, no, let's just take the year off. Let's move on, because this year, you know, we're not doing anything. So
if there's even a chance of the Lightning making the playoffs, they will bring Stamkos back.
Oh, for sure. It's just they have the tough thing with them is they can win all they want. You have to have 6 other teams lose.
Yeah.
But they're winning. There's so much out of their control that they can't.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've been in February. They've been a fantastic team. So, you know, it's possible. Yeah. Heck, even since the new year, they have the third highest possession, score zone and venue Corsi 4 percentage in the league at 53.5.
The Lightning do?
Yeah. It's Boston, LA, Tampa Bay, Calgary, Chicago, Washington, as your top 6 since January 1st.
Interesting. Yeah. Did you guys see that insane OT shift by Drouin yesterday?
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yes.
He is so good. Can we acknowledge that for a second? Jonathan Drouin is a beast, and the fact that he was nearly traded, well, supposedly nearly traded last year, is mind-boggling.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what was going on behind the scenes. What a strange situation that was, but he's so good.
He's ridiculous.
Just so good. So, anyways, I just wanted to acknowledge that amazing shift, because I watched it, and it was
fantastic.
Nice.
I I think we maybe overhype him a touch just because of his name. I think he's fantastic. Don't get me wrong. I think he gets more credit than maybe he deserves compared to similar players in similar spots. And I'm thinking of Johnny Gaudreau when I say this. And, you know, maybe if you flip those two players and Drouin plays on Calgary and Gaudreau plays on Tampa Bay, then we're not having this conversation. Instead, we're saying, you know, Drouin deserves more hype. But I think especially, you know, age considered, position considered, experience considered, they're very, very similar, other than Gaudreau being younger. Yeah, Drouin is awesome, but there are other players out there doing that. And I'd
agree with you too. I think because of what happened last year, and his name was in the spotlight so much because of whatever is going on behind the scenes, I think he does kind of get overhyped a little bit. It's interesting, I think, too, when you look at Tampa, and that Stamkos is clearly their guy. Based, you know, you don't give a guy an 8-year contract without him being the face of your franchise, and which he clearly is. But I find it interesting that it's almost like the guys that they've brought in to build around Stamkos are now better than him.
Oh, I don't want to say Nikita Kucherov is the best player on that team.
Better than him.
Yeah, Nikita Kucherov blows Stamkos out of the water. Like, he's just better. Victor Hedman, I would argue, is probably a more impactful player on that team. Tyler Johnson, Andre Palat are around the same ability as Stamkos, and Anton Stralman, when he is healthy, is providing another huge boost to that team. I don't think Steven Stamkos is the best player on that team. I think he is the face of that team, and he is there to sell tickets and score goals, and no one scores goals like he does outside of Alexander Ovechkin. Exactly.
He's the John Cena of the Lightning. He's the face of the team, but he's not the best guy.
That is a wonderfully strange comparison.
He's got an unreal shooting percentage.
Yeah, he and Ovi are the only two that have averaged like over 16%, I think. Or not Ovi.
Oh my god.
Who is it? Hayduk? He and Hayduk maybe the only two that over averaged over 16%.
Hayduk, that's random.
Milan Hayduk had one of the highest shooting percentages in the league while he was active, year after year after year, because he would take about 80 shots and 75 of them would be from inside the blue paint. Dude did not shoot from anywhere but the crease, and as a result, scored about 1 in 5. Not a great skater, not really good at anything else other than net front presence. He is Thomas Holmstrom 2.0.
And I'm sure with all the stats and things that people look at now, there's probably something out there that the percentage of goals a guy gets in the paint, well, you're just talking about that, clearly it's there. And that would be interesting to find out too, like guys who score 30 goals a season, well, how many of those were legit tip-ins, or how many of those were on the power play, and how many of those, I mean, there's obviously, that's all out there. I don't have hours in my day, nor do I get paid by TSN to research it. So I wouldn't go into that much in depth to find those stats out, but they're clearly there. And I think that would be an interesting thing to look at, right? Like, we have a 30 goal score, but 12 of those are on the power play and 10 of those are tip-ins. So really only 8 of those goals came on 5-on-5 hockey that were good shots.
It depends. It'd be interesting about that, right? Like if we're saying, for example, this player who isn't named, but I'm going to throw a name out there that fits, Joe Pavelski. You know, if that's the case, it's a good player. If the case is we're talking about a Johan Franzen who stood in front of the net and let the puck bounce off him a bunch of times, maybe not the same dude. You know, Brian Boyle, maybe not the same dude. But if we're talking about Joe Pavelski who's skating around and, you know, swinging his stick out of there to get magical deflections that no one saw coming, you know, there is a certain amount of talent that you can't differentiate between from the raw play-by-play data.
Oh, for sure. Right place, right time. That it's key in hockey. It's a big factor.
It is a real talent. All right. Any other teams you guys want to touch on in the Atlantic?
No.
Not that I can think of.
Yeah. I'm all out too. I have no more witty banter to offer. And so I think that's where that's where we'll wrap this up then.
Wow. I didn't know you could run out of that.
It's late here. It's been a long day. I need to recharge for tomorrow. You know, it's on a cycle. It's like a battery.
The air gets a little thin up in Thunder Bay. So,
it does. I've been in ski hills all day. You know, brain's not working quite right. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of the Game Time Decision Podcast. If you like what you heard, you can check us out online on SoundCloud, on iTunes, both of those Game Time Decision Podcast. You can find all of our episodes on lastwordonhockey.com. You can find the show on Twitter at GTD_podcast. Find me at Colton Prale. Find Nick at NickSega19. And find Graham at GHAM614. All of us on Twitter. Worthy of a follow. Maybe not Graham, but you know, whatever. Follow him anyways. He's a nice guy. That's going to do it. We will be back next week. There is no analytics series this week. We're doing an interview still, so don't worry about that. This one's going to be with Peter Miliotis of the Pop-Turnative podcast. Great talk, interesting, especially if you like the behind-the-scenes work of podcasting, of hockey, of pop culture. Highly recommend you give that a listen. The analytics series is coming back the week after. On March 1st, we'll be dropping an episode with Carolyn Wilkie. The week after that, I'll be sitting down with the people at CKM Sports and Garrett Hole, and we will be discussing analytics. Very excited for that episode, so all of that on the horizon. This will be coming back next Monday or Tuesday, depending on when I edit it. That's it for this. Have a good one. We'll be right back.